Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
Welcome. You know, today's children, they grow up immersed in this digital media, which can have both positive and negative effects on healthy development. Do you know what your kids are doing on social media? Do you know how they're using this incredible world of digital media? Well, today we're going to find out what we should be knowing and how involved we should be. And my guest, as always, fan favorite, Dr. Corey Cross, pediatrician and spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Cross, it's a pleasure as always. What's happening with our kids in this digital world? Do you feel it's making them smarter, more worldly? Is it positive? What do you think about it?
I think that digital media can be a double-edged sword. And so as parents, we need to make sure that we are allowing children to use it as the tool that it should be, but making sure that we are putting parameters that help them to have some control around it. And I say that in that even as adults, we have a hard time controlling ourselves, it seems, when it comes to social media. So it's not that I think that parents need to do this in a punitive manner to their children, but really because it seems to be something that is so hard for everyone to control that if as adults we're having a hard time controlling ourselves and finding balance, that children are definitely going to have that same hard time. And so we really need to help them because there are so many experiences they need to have in the real world, and there are so many ways where something you write on social media can go askew, and they don't have that life experience to know that. So we really, as parents, we need to guide them. This is where we need to be parents.
Well, how do we guide them? Because there are so many forms now. There's Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and TikTok and all of these things. How do we guide them, Dr. Cross? What are we supposed to do because there's so many of them now?
It's true. It's very much ubiquitous. It seems to be moving at a pace that it's hard for anybody to really keep up, particularly parents who might not be in that space. And so that is difficult. I would say, first and foremost, one of the main guides to parenting is leading by example, so being a good role model. So that means that you have to have some boundaries for when and where and how you use your phone, and you need to keep those consistent for the most part so that you can show your children that you're not bringing the phone to the dinner table or you're not spending, you know, all your time when you're supposed to be really interacting with them, keep constantly checking your phone. So if you set up good behavior, your children do watch that, and you come from a much stronger position when you're trying to talk to them about it. Then what do you do to monitor what your children are doing? Really depends on their age. So when you give your child that first cell phone or that first iPad, a lot of times what we do is we give it to them because we're sort of either caught off guard or we've decided it's the right time. There's a lot of other friends getting it, and we're like, okay, we give in. We give them this. And we sort of give it to them, and we hope it all goes okay, and we don't set up the proper parameters. And I think that every time you give your child a device, you need to let them know that this is almost like a temporary privilege. So you're going to see how it goes, that this is what you expect from, these are the rules. And if you set it up that way, then again, you have the right to monitor. So when you give your child your first cell phone or iPad or whatever, you're going to say, well, if they're less than 13, they're not even supposed to be on social media sites. But if they're older than 13, then you do say things like, okay, so I understand that you probably think you know how to use this and you may know more about it than I do, but let me explain to you certain things. Whatever you write here can follow you forever. Whether it's supposed to disappear or not doesn't matter. Someone can screenshot it. So please don't write things that you're going to find embarrassing if grandma reads them or if your future college reads them or if a future employer reads them, because it will come back to haunt you. Do not put any picture up here that you wouldn't be happy if I saw on our photo stream. So this is not for private stuff. Even if you think you're sending it privately, there is no privacy, and making sure they really understand that. And then you have to know as parents that they're going to make mistakes. That's what kids are going to do. So you have to be prepared for that. They're going to go on a site that they're not supposed to. They're going to send something, hopefully not all that inappropriate, but maybe something mean or just not the right answer to something. And you're going to have to step in. So you're going to know that that's going to happen. So be prepared. Don't be surprised. You can act disappointed with them and be like, I never expected this from you. That's fine as a parent to say. But in the back of your mind, you do expect it, which is why you need to monitor.
That is really a great list to begin and to help parents kind of navigate all of this. Now, should we be joining them on these social media sites? Should we be friends on Facebook? Should we see their Instagram? Obviously, Snapchat, as you said, disappears, but do we get to see that? Or TikTok, you know, they dance. All these kids, they dance. And then they put their dances on this Musical.ly. And should we be able to see everything that they're doing, or do we start from that place of trust?
I think it depends on the age at which you give your child their first device. Most people are giving their children their first device at a very young age, right? So it seems like lots of children in that middle school age are allowed to have their own devices. And before that, even in the elementary age, they're having their first iPads. And what I'm seeing is that these kids are doing sort of a workaround from not being allowed on social media, whether it is that they get on social media by putting a young, you know, an older age, a different birth date, or what I'm seeing more often is that they create these group chats where they have almost everybody in their grade basically on one text message chain, and they're not really communicating. They're sort of doing the same thing you put into on social media. You like throw something out there and you see what sticks, you see what accolades you get back. And so it has that same social media feel. So when you're allowing your child to have a device in middle school or elementary school, those children really do need monitoring. I mean, you don't let them do a lot of things by themselves, right? You don't let them go to the movies really by themselves. You know, you double check that they're getting to the friends' houses that they say they're going to. I mean, we do a lot of following up on our elementary and our middle school kids. And I think that that same sort of parenting needs to happen in the digital space. So I think that it's totally fine to say, you know, when you're online, like, I can go where you're going. Like, I can check up on you and I expect to be friends with you. And by the way, I might be reading your emails. Like, I am where you're at, because that's what you do when you parent at that age. As your children get into high school, I think that, of course, that's where they can get into more trouble. But at the same time, it is where you're preparing them, hopefully, to be able to, like, leave the nest and be responsible. So at some point, you have to pull away a little bit. Now, depending on your child, that might be a different age for different people. I do think it's fair to say, like, I'd like to be friends with you on Instagram. How do you feel about that? If the kid says absolutely fine, then you can be friends with them. It's no problem, because the truth is it should be absolutely fine. But if you have a child who's like, well, I'd really like some privacy, you can talk about what they might be posting that they may feel uncomfortable if you saw. Now, at the same time, I remember having a phone in my bedroom and talking about all sorts of things that I really wouldn't want my parents listening in on, not because it was anything bad, but because you do want some privacy as a teenager. So I do think that there is a fine line, but I think that it depends on where your child's at when you let them sort of have that space. Because when they go off to college, I don't think that most parents are monitoring everything they're doing, because they're adults. And so at some point, they need to make that transition.
Well, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that happened with my family when my son was 9, he was, you know, playing a video game. And now the video games have so many interactions. You can play against people and you can talk to them. And I was really hesitant to get him the headset so that he could talk to strangers and play these games with strangers. And one of them, I saw my son Clayton on a ladder looking behind his video game for the numbers. And I'm like, Clayton, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, this guy wants these numbers because he's going to help me get hacks. And I just lost it. I was like, are you kidding me? And then we had to go through this whole thing where we had to shut it down and then do it after he's, you know, grounding for a while. And they don't understand. He didn't get it. And he was horribly embarrassed. But what about this whole interaction with these strangers that people are commenting on their posts and people are talking to them through their headsets? And I mean, it's just downright scary.
It absolutely is. And that I find that a lot when I talk to boys, that they don't realize that the people that they're playing with might have different intentions. They might not be who they say they are. And sometimes that's for a fairly non-bad reason, a fairly benign reason, I guess I should say, because, you know, they know if they don't say that they're a 10-year-old boy, a 10-year-old boy won't play with them at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So they just pretend they're a 10-year-old boy. But still, that's a problem, right? And so kids don't realize, they're so innocent, they don't realize that who they're talking to online might not be who they think they are. And so I think that, you know, playing with strangers is something that you really have to think about whether or not you want to allow your child to do. A lot of these games have settings where you can only let people you know play with your child. And so that, I think,
yeah, that's what we did.
Setting. And I think that that's the right way to set it up. But a lot of parents don't even realize that. But if you do decide to go down the other way, yeah, you really have to, you kind of have to get into the nitty-gritty that there are bad people in the world who will try to trick you or try to find out where you are or try to get information from you or just might not be the type of person that you'd want to hang around with if you met them on the street. And so you have to let your kids know that, because most of us are pretty decent people and our kids think that everybody else is pretty decent. And that's good that they haven't had those experiences with people who aren't, but at the same time, it makes them a lot more vulnerable.
Well, I was one of those parents that didn't realize and didn't think about it. And then we put on those parental controls of only people mm-hmm. that they could know. Another thing that I think parents are running into, Dr. Cross, is, you know, the AAP has put out screen time guidelines over the years, which used to mean television. Mm-hmm. And for us, of course, you know, after school cartoons, whatever it was. But now screen time is a whole different ball game. And screen time, school requires screen time, whether they're in elementary school or in junior high or in high school now. They have to be on the internet. They have to be on their computers. And they even do homework on their phones. So mm-hmm. how can we monitor screen time? That whole guideline is now changed. Has to be.
That's right. That is why they changed the guideline, because it is impossible. So what used to be about 2 hours or less was what was allowed for screen time or recommended. And so when screens became basically interchangeable with doing your homework, and it's impossible to know what they're doing because they're multitasking, they're doing their homework, but they're also FaceTiming or chatting or checking their email, and you can't really tell when they're using their screens for schoolwork versus when they're using their screens for entertainment. So it became very difficult for parents to monitor and to follow the guidelines that the AP had written. So we sort of changed those on their heads and said, basically, look, there needs to be a certain amount of time you're not in front of devices. And there's certain times when devices are probably not great, like at the dinner table, before bed, the hour before bed in particular, right? We've made these times where we say these are times where you should put your devices away. And then on top of that, they want like at least an hour's worth of physical activity every day for children. And that's actually for everybody. And so between getting enough sleep, having an hour of exercise, not using your phone the hour before bed, not using it during dinner, then with that time, there shouldn't be more than a couple of hours to have screen time after school. And so that is an easier way for parents to monitor. If they make sure that the other things are happening, then hopefully the screen time will fall into place. I think the multitasking is something, again, it takes parenting. So my children are younger, and when they go on the computer or the iPads for their homework, every time I have to be like, hey, you're allowed to go on it for this. When you're done with that, if you want to do something else, that's a conversation we have. Like, this is not an open season. Like, you can't do anything you want right now. And so, you know, sometimes I do catch my older daughter and she's like, well, I was just going to Google this and that. I was like, did you ask us? I was like, otherwise I'm taking it away. And she's like, okay. You know, and so like you do, you have to, it's not like they just listen, you know, you have to say it and then you have to follow through. And, you know, every once in a while, it's like any other parenting, they try to push and see if you really mean it. And, you know, it's that fun parenting that you get to do. But I do think setting your parental controls is important. And I'll tell you this one story because it's embarrassing and it happened to me just last month. We updated, I guess, our operating system on our laptop, and my husband had just done it. And my daughter was supposed to be studying for a states and capitals quiz. And so so I wanted to print her out a map, you know, of all the states so that she could practice at home, like a blank map. And so I type in free printable, like, state map. And all of a sudden, as the thing pops up, a pop-up pops up, and it's porn. And I was like, oh, my God. And she's standing right there. And so, like, I try to close it. And, of course, you know, it's, like, so hard to close. And you close it. And I was like, what just happened? So then, like, stupid me goes back to the you know, the Google. And I'm like, oh, maybe I typed something wrong. So I type and I go again, right? Nope, pops up again. I was like, okay, I don't know why if you're typing a U.S. map, you know, that you're going to get porn, but obviously there's a problem here, right? And I'd already sent my daughter out of the room, but she was like, what was that? Why was there a naked lady on the computer? And I'm like, oh my goodness. So,
oh, that yeah, my is husband, so funny.
It's so funny, right? And so my husband was like, oh, I think I had to disable the pop-ups or something when I was doing it. I didn't reset all the security stuff, you know, when he was updating all of the software. And so I was like, I can't believe that literally not having it on for whatever it had been, like an hour, you're already having porn coming through your computer. And so I was thinking, that's amazing because, you know, we have a lot, all the parental controls on there. And it never occurred to me how much they must be preventing. So then I had to have a conversation with my daughter, and she's like, why was there a naked person on our computer? And I was like, well, sweetie, I was like, you know, I tell you that the computer can go sort of anywhere, I said, and you know, it's sort of open to anything, and there's a lot of things that people put on there that really aren't appropriate. I said, sometimes they sort of send it over to your computer without you realizing it. When you open something else pops up, even though you don't mean to go there. I said, that's why we're, you know, so particular about where you go and what you type in, because it can start sending you images you really don't want to see. She goes, yeah, I didn't want to see that naked lady. I said, yeah, me neither. You know, and we left it at that. But she was like, wow, I had no idea naked people were on the computer. I said, yep. That's a lot of them. You know,
oh, boy. And once that's a rabbit hole, boy.
Yeah, because, exactly.
And it's weird because it's true. And with things like Google, and as we're talking about digital media and TikTok and social media, even something as innocuous as Google, which can be used to learn the most complicated and amazing things, can also then sort of predict. And when I'm studying Constitution with my kids and things, all I have to do is type in like one letter. And, mm-hmm. you know, the Stephen Douglas debates come right up after I type in S. So mm-hmm. it's like, you know, it knows what you're doing, but our kids don't sort of realize that. So sometimes they may even be curious and searching something, and then that's going to start to come back again and again every time they type in a letter. So it is kind of something that they need to learn as well as Google. Now, mm-hmm. as we get into this, what do you want them to know about any new recommendations or studies about excessive screen time? And, you know, not, I don't want to use the word addiction, but addiction, you know, not being able to put it down. Just wait, mom, just wait. I have to answer this text. Hang on, where they don't even look up at you. And it's like, stop, or I'm going to take that away right now. Do you know about what's going on? Are they studying this? Should we be worried about our kids?
Yes, I do know about this. They are studying this, and you know, some things are worrisome, and I think that knowing about them really changes your behavior. At least it has changed mine, not just as a parent, but even when I go out with friends. So there have been studies about what happens when you have a cell phone present during a meal. And this one study, they had the cell phone, and it wasn't being used. It was just lying face down on a table. But then they asked people afterwards how they felt about the quality of the conversation they had just had. And it seems that when a cell phone is present during a meal, it actually does change the quality of the conversation. That people, because they're there, the cell phone's there, it might be that you have this idea that you could be interrupted, that the person could take that call at any moment. So they don't really tend to let the conversation get as meaningful and as deep. And they don't feel as connected to the person they're talking to because they know that even if they don't seem distracted, that just having it there means they could be distracted. So I think as a parent, or as, you know, when you go out with friends, you want somebody to know that you're there for them and to be able to have that meaningful conversation, particularly as a parent, if, like, this is when you get to talk to your kids, is during dinner. If you bring your phone to the table and you put it upside down, even just for an emergency, they may be less likely to tell you about their day, particularly if you have the habit of picking it up in an emergency. And that emergency, I mean, really, is it an emergency, or could it wait, you know, the half hour it takes you to have dinner? So, I mean, it depends on your job, of course, and what you do. But if you don't need to take the phone to the table, and even when you're out to dinner with friends, if you could leave it someplace unseen, I think that that does make a difference, or at least studies are showing that. Then there is, or there are, studies that are looking at more of how do you feel if you are a user of a cell phone, and whether you use it a lot or a little, how do you feel when you're separated from your cell phone? So they tested this stuff on college students, which I found amusing just in and of itself, because you could just imagine the studies. You know? And so they had kids who qualified, or I guess adults who qualified as, they qualified themselves as high daily users or low daily users or moderate daily users. And then basically they had them come into the classroom and they confiscated their cell phones. And while they had their cell phones, they started to make them ring. And the ability for these students to continue the tasks at hand, which were like word searches, after they had heard
their
cell
phone ring. That's like torture for these kids.
Wasn't able to answer. Yeah, I guess it kind of is. They reported increased psychological stress, physiological stress.
Of course they did.
Decreased cognition. And so it was really, they wouldn't perform as well, you know, and so they really had a hard time separating from that device. And then they did another study where some of the kids got the device taken away and some were able to put it under their chair. And if you were a low user or a moderate user, being able to put it under your chair actually decreased your stress eventually than even being allowed to have it out. Whereas if you were a high user, whether it got taken away or put under your chair, you were freaking out. And so I think that we do see, depending on how connected we feel to our device and how much we depend on it, that it really can increase our anxiety to not be around it. But that sometimes if you are a low user, that sometimes having that space from it does decrease your anxiety. Like, you actually are able to enjoy life a little bit more and just be present where you're at. So I think that that's important. They even did one more study where they had a phone, they sent somebody a text message during a conversation at a coffee shop. Like, basically they had these people, when they got their coffee, say, "We're going to send you a little survey. Would you mind taking it?" They say no. They're not really sending, well, they are sending them a survey, but what they're really trying to figure out is if they answer the survey during the conversation that they're now sitting down to have with somebody at a coffee shop, or if they wait till later, and if they do answer it, how it affects their relationship. So even the people who, everybody answered it right away when they got it. Nobody like just was like, "Oh, I'm going to ignore this because I'm in this conversation." Everybody opened it, looked at it, and even the people who were not the ones being talked to, but the ones with the phone, even they felt that they had less of a connection with the person they were talking to because they used their phone. But you would think that they could have not used it if they didn't want to, but I guess they felt like they had to answer. And so I think that, you know, there is something there that pulls us towards it when it rings, that we have to look. And so I think, you know, setting the notifications to something that doesn't bother you, turning the ringer off when you really don't want to be bothered, I think that's important to take those steps, because it is so hard to ignore and it really does affect us.
Well, it certainly does. And while you were saying that, my son texted me to say he needs help with biology and nutrition, and he's in college and it's finals week. And I caught myself turning to look and I went, "What am I doing? I can't believe I just did this. This is what we're discussing now." So even for adults, this is something that's crazy hard to ignore, because you feel this pull, like somebody needs you or somebody needs something. You're a pediatrician. You know, right. You could get these all day long. So wrap it up for us. Role modeling, teaching our kids, parental controls, all of these things we've discussed today, Dr. Cross, put it into a nice, neat little package on digital media, social media, and our children, and how we can help them because I think that's really the main message is communication and helping them to learn to navigate it themselves, because we're not always going to be able to navigate it for them.
That's exactly right. I think you summed it up really well, that this is a process, but it's a process that requires parental guidance. And so when you start, depending at the age, you've got to figure out what your child is ready for, and you should put more guidance than you think you need, and you can pull that off as you see how they do. You have to expect that every child is going to make a mistake and be ready for that, and you need to follow through with consequences when they do, but not be surprised. And so that means that you really should be monitoring, because they are going to be making mistakes, and our job is to pick them up when they fall down and help them learn from that experience and hope that that experience isn't so bad that they did something that we can't really get back from. As we go on with using these devices, we need to model great behavior, like you said, but we also need to help them to realize that there are times when you need to enjoy the moment, and it's really hard for everybody to be able to step back and do that, particularly when things are buzzing at us almost ubiquitously. We need to be able to pull back and enjoy that time when we're just present in what we're doing, and it's hard enough for adults. We need to help children and teens carve that time out so they do have a really good balance. And I think that if we do that and if we approach it that way, that we're not doing this to be punitive, we're doing this because there are so many great things in life that you can't focus on just this, then we really do help our kids to have a balance and to really be happy.
Wonderfully put, and what a great wrap up. Dr. Cross, as always, you're such a great guest. And parents, please share this show with your teens and your tweens. Sit down and listen to it together, or send it to your kids that are in college so they can hear about the studies that Dr. Cross was mentioning today, because it is alarming when we feel this pull all the time, as she says, about the buzzing that's going on all the time. So share these shows, share them with your friends and family, put them on your social media, and remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast and all the other Healthy Children podcasts on RadioMD.com. You can listen on Spotify and iHeart, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere that podcasts are played. We want you to listen at RadioMD.com and HealthyChildren.org, the consumer website of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Thanks for listening. I'm Melanie Cole. Stay well.